Well, he heads up the Dreams Foundation, Craig Webb, and in a moment we're going to talk with him about dreams. I'm looking forward to this one. So get ready on Coast to Coast AM. Craig Webb is the executive director of the Dreams Foundation. He's a dream and consciousness author, researcher, a frontier physicist and inventor, and a professional speaker trainer. His life path was set in motion 2 decades ago when he nearly drowned on a whitewater rafting trip. He suddenly began recalling up to 10 dreams a day and having verifiable visions of the future. Since then, he's graduated from McGill University, participated in pioneering dream and consciousness research at Stanford University and at Montreal's Sacré-Cœur Hospital. He was also the designed electronic mind development and biofeedback tools with worldwide distribution. Interesting. And found and produced Making Contact, an international radio show. He's our guest tonight on Coast to Coast, Craig Webb. Hi, Craig. Good to have you with us.
Hey, great to join you, George. Great to join you.
Now, you have had a pretty varied background before you even got interested in dreams and consciousness, right?
Right. Actually, I almost got kidnapped.
Kidnapped? What happened?
People say, you know, how did I get interested in all this stuff? And I make a little joke about it, but I had a near-death experience, and not a usual one. This near-death experience lasted about 4 years. 4 years, and McGill University gave me a diploma for that.
What happened?
It was called a Bachelor of Science. Ever had one of those near-death experiences?
I've had a Bachelor of Arts near-death experience.
Oh, okay. Well, close. A similar kind of thing. And I joke about it a little, but actually I'm sharing what I really believe now more and more is kind of a truth. You know, in the culture I was coming up on the East Coast here around McGill and Montreal, there wasn't too much talk about inner exploration, dreams, all this kind of stuff. And I was being trained in hardcore science. You know, I have a degree in physics. So I guess my whole creative side, the whole intuition side, maybe emotional relationship connection, was actually dying off.
Tell me a little bit about this whitewater rafting trip. What happened there?
Well, at around the time when I guess this was at its worst and I was really starting to train very hard in the objective world, I went on a whitewater rafting trip and got stuck under the raft. And you know how the world kind of spins around.
Oh, yeah.
You're not quite sure what's what, and this is helped by the fact that there's dust in the water and everything, and it's kind of murky. And so I tried to pop up, but I kept coming up and hitting the raft.
Oh.
At least I assume, because then I kind of got quiet and looked around and had this thought, you know, breaking through kind of the fear awareness of whatever drowning is, that said, wow, this is it, you know, goodbye, this is the end. And with that, I looked around, and things kind of got clear and really, really peaceful, which, you know, was quite a sudden shift. And I looked around going, wow, this is good.
But not a good sign if you were alive before.
Yeah, well, I didn't quite have that perspective of remembering things.
Yeah.
But the feeling inside me shifted, and somehow, almost like a movie scene, you know, cut to new scene. I was back in the raft and continuing on the rafting trip, and I guess we fished some of the other rafters out of the water because we'd flipped. And I continued the rest of the day as if nothing has happened except for that deep, deep feeling of peace. And you could say it's kind of a near-death experience, but I think it's more of a symptom of the long 4-year degree of really exploring, you know, the objective science. And here I was, because right after that rafting experience, I started remembering 10 dreams a day or, you know, sometimes more.
10 dreams?
And you know how they disappear after breakfast or even by the time you have your shower?
Oh, yeah, they're gone.
They're pretty quick. I have like little butterflies landing and taking off. Well, these ones lasted, well, into lunch, sometimes into following days. And I was like, what the heck is this? Because I'd had maybe a recall of one a month before that, if that.
Right, I'm the same way.
And I hadn't been interested. But now, you know, like a good little scientist that I was, I started taking notes and recording these things and all of a sudden starting having dreams of the future. I precognitively dreamt my grandpa's really serious stroke and almost died in the hospital. You know, after being healthy for maybe 15, 20 years, walking 5 or 10 miles a day, he was a big walker. And that shocked me and the whole family. And they said, how did you know? Because I phoned from Florida during a swim training camp saying, well, I had this weird, I don't know if it was a dream or experience this morning, that Grandpa was like dead or nearly dead. Is everything okay?
Well, now, how soon did he have his stroke?
Before
the dream.
Because I checked, hey, you know, could you check? This is really weird. And they thought it was a bit odd because I was never interested in that kind of thing and never talked about it.
Right.
Certainly never called home to check. And then they phoned back and said, everything's fine and don't worry. And I guess it was just, quote, unquote, you know, a weird dream. And here I was 2 or 3 days later arriving home from the training camp. And they said, wow, we didn't want to tell you, but I'm glad you're home now because Grandpa's in the hospital. And it happened about a day after you called us.
Okay, but when they called you that moment, everything was okay, right?
Yeah, right.
Okay.
So that was precognitive.
Family does that sometimes, Craig. I mean, I know with me, they will not tell me if there's anything wrong, and I go nuts. I get livid when that happens. You know, I got elderly parents that live in Detroit, and you know, if they stub their toe, I want to know about it. They won't tell me anything, and you know, you hear about these from other family members months later. That you know, you hear, hey, did you know your mother was in the hospital or this or that, and you know, you call them up and say, why? And they say, what do they always say? We don't want you to worry.
Yeah, we're trying to protect you,
yeah.
Or it would have just upset you for no reason, or whatever. Interestingly enough, I think this is one of the realms where some of the things we'll be talking about this tonight actually really come into play. First of all, because it's true, the families don't always update close members or even close friends. You know, if we have a strong emotional connection, it doesn't have to be family. And so that we start using altered types of perception, extrasensory perception or dreams or sometimes other meditative states, and we pick up events like the death of a loved one or a serious accident or something of that nature, sometimes good things too.
Tell me about the Dreams Foundation. What is it? How did you start it? Why did you start it?
Well, to kind of put a long story short,
we've got 3 hours, Greg. Don't worry about long.
Okay, to leave a long story long.
Yeah.
After the rafting thing, I started exploring the lucid dreams that were happening, precognitive dreams, all kinds of other experiences that I didn't know what they were, and decided, you know, there's a lot of stuff that my science and physics training didn't teach me, but I don't want to throw it out either because obviously it taught a lot of useful things about how the world works. And I tried to bridge these two worlds eventually and find a foundation. First, I worked with Stephen LaBerge, who some of your listeners may know at Stanford.
Great man.
At the Lucid Dreaming
Research.
I think he's been on the show before.
Sure has.
Yeah, and a great guy and a real great mentor. And then came back to Canada and, in collaboration with the Sacre Coeur Sleep and Nightmare Lab, decided to create the Dreams Foundation, which, you know, kind of bridges the worlds of the scientific research, some of the statistical stuff that people are coming up with all about dreams and consciousness, and then also the public realm. How could we get this information in practical way, you know, applications to the public, because it's taking a long time to get from, like, the lab to the people. So that's kind of the mission of the Dreams Foundation. And we're a nonprofit foundation, you know, and we try to respond to requests, although we have pretty limited manpower and programs to go into the high schools and, you know, different things. Try to bring lucid dreaming and dream incubation to help replace drug abuse, things like that.
Are you finding that more people are beginning to dream about real strange things right now? I mean, I think we had a lot of this during 9/11. People just didn't understand what they were. But I have a feeling, Craig, something is going on here.
It's not just during 9/11, by the way, before it.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. Are we getting the same kind of feedback? Are you?
Well, I've seen there's certain kind of trends because I'm on this kind of email hot list, first from a few news groups and things, but also just because a lot of people write into the foundation about their dreams. I don't know what it is. It's like you could almost make the analogy that it's kind of like a collective unconsciousness weather meter. So if something's up, we sort of get a whole bunch of dreams beforehand because people are tuning into events, and that happened with 9/11. But in general, it's hard to say, you know. I think the whole world is speeding up. We're kind of in a cooking pot here, not just the global warming, but in our kind of consciousness exploration, maybe a planetary evolutionary development, you know, as Earth, as a Gaia self here, as the people being cells of some great organism that we call humanity and maybe even all the other animals. I think we're waking up to something big and new, exciting here.
Who is sending us these dreams, these messages, or are people on what I've always called the wireless matrix, the grid, where they kind of interconnect with each other? I'm going to tell you some great stories,
yeah,
and I'm sure you can share some with us tonight as well, Craig. But do you think that in the dream state, somebody, something is trying to send us a message?
Well, that comes to the big why do we dream question. And I think it's kind of like the Sufi elephant. Do you know that story?
Tell me.
It's an interesting little Sufi teaching tale, but there's some kind of creature that appears outside the city walls, and the people are a bit afraid because they hear all kinds of noises. So they send out four blind men, and the blind men check it out and come back and report, and one says, "Wow, well, it's like a huge rug." And the other one beside him says, no, it's like a big rope. You know, and the first one was holding the ear, and the second one was holding the tail. Third one goes, "Are you kidding? It's like a huge snake, and it's pretty dangerous." And he had the trunk.
Yeah.
And the last guy says, "No, it's just like a temple pillar, and it won't hurt us." And he was touching the leg. So each has a picture of what's going on, but obviously they don't have the whole picture. And I think dreaming is just such a huge environment. We could almost say that, you know, it's almost the same question as what is life, or why do we experience like sensory perception in waking life? Well, who knows the why, but can we make it practical? Is there a dream weaver? Maybe that's a question we could direct a little bit more. There is some kind of inner wisdom. I mean, I'm saying this from absolute knowing, and obviously there's lots of research to back it up. But there's different theories and hypotheses out there about, you know, dreams are garbage created the moment we wake up, this kind of thing. And lucid dreaming has disproven that. And there's other theories about, you know, the dreams are just cleaning the hard drive and the mind and things.
Mm-hmm.
But anybody who's followed them, probably like yourself and many of the listeners, I'm sure, and I hope that they phone in to share some of their experiences.
Oh, they will. We'll take some great calls, I'm sure.
They've experienced firsthand, you know, that there's things coming that are important guidances and not always, you know, deep, life-changing spiritual messages or great, you know, world-shaking creations or inventions. Sometimes just simple things about how to get along better with your dad or change your diet a little bit because your body's upset or don't have, you know, Chinese food at midnight before going to sleep.
Everything affects your dreams.
Definitely. And certainly the things you've been thinking during the day. In fact, there's some interesting research. Not too many people know about this research. This was done originally by Tori Nielsen at the Sacré-Cœur Lab, that dreams actually pick up from waking events, obviously during the day, and it's called day residue. But also there's kind of a peak in dream recall of events that happened 5 to 7 days in the past. You know, more than days 2, 3, 4 in the past. So there's some kind of interesting, I guess, neurophysiological processes that we remember things like about a week ago better than we do 2 or 3 days ago when it comes to dreams. Interesting, huh?
Can you, in your dream state, send messages to other people and accomplish things?
What I call the inner net with no T, you know,
You got net. It.
We can certainly send and receive messages. The challenge is when it comes to doing it consciously. And certainly some people have success. I think it's like anything. We have to train a little bit, like an inner muscle, like a mental muscle, you might think.
I don't think you can do it consciously. I think it's a subconscious power where you simply let it go. You just create the thought, create the image, and let this subconscious power do what it does.
And you've had success with receiving it?
I have had incredible success with it. And I've done some experiments with it, and I've had some failures with it. But overall, I can say beyond a shadow of a doubt, Craig, that you can let your subconscious mind accomplish things for yourself while you sleep. You talk about working away while you're sleeping.
Oh, definitely.
It's an incredible resource if you believe in it, if you're positive about it. From the moment you say to yourself, "This isn't going to work," or "This can't be," you know what? It's not going to happen.
Certainly, yeah, it becomes self-fulfilling prophecy here. Well, the beliefs and the ideas, because we're dealing with subjective things here. Most people don't really recognize when we go into the subjective realm, which, you know, dreams are part of, that the beliefs, the ideas we hold, the feelings we have, what we think about, our emotional connections with people and with objects, those end up being kind of the software and the filters that either let in or block out the data or attract it to us or push it away. So when you say that if you think about it and you believe it and you think it's easy and you just try it with kind of a playful attitude, you're right on the money. And there's people out there who say, you know, I don't dream, and they stand pretty strong by that. You can sort of sense them right away when you see that. And in a way, they're telling the truth, because the part of them that you're talking with, usually sort of a certain stronghold conscious self, doesn't recall any dreams. So in a way, they don't dream or they don't have dreams. But, you know, if we hooked them up to electrodes, put them in the sleep lab, we'd see that they have REM cycles. And if we woke them up, they may actually have memories of events going on if it was at the right time of night that we woke them up. So
I want to spend a lot of time with you after the break about lucid dreaming, because it's a very strong way for people to get a lot of things done. Have you ever talked with or come across Rosemary Ellen Guiley?
Yeah, sure. One of my colleagues.
Wonderful person, isn't she?
Yeah, definitely.
I mean, my first exposure to a lot of this was with her, and she taught me a lot about some of the things that were going on in my life. I mean, I used to have this incredible dream, Craig, where I graduated from the University of Detroit. I needed 128 credits to do it. I got my degree, but I worked full-time during the daytime, and I went to college at night, and I was married and had a little girl. And, I mean, I never stopped working, and I never stopped going to school. I mean, it was just all the time. But I had, for years, and I'm telling you, up until around 1999 almost, I kept having the same nightmare all the time that I was one credit short on my degree. And I mean, I would wake up in a cold sweat. It got to the point where it was so bad, I had to sleep with next to the dresser of the bed with my diploma in there. So when I'd wake up in the morning, I looked at it to make sure it was there. I used to talk with Rosemary about that, and she talked me through it. And sure enough, one day, it just went away, and I never had the dream again.
Wow. Well, it's a great lead-in to other people and listeners, I'm sure, who are having recurring dreams. And what can we do about these things?
Man, I don't know. So the people with the Dreams Foundation, what do you get? Do you get stories, or do you get people who call you for help? What do they do?
You name it. We got pretty much everything from, you know, research people who are asking questions, and lots of simple dreamers who have, you know, a brother died and he came and visited them in a dream and they're really scared, or they dreamt the future. Or like yourself, many people write in about recurring dreams, a presence in the room or a demon on their chest or a chase dream. A chase dream is the biggest one among college students. These things have actually been statistically measured as kind of
universal. But are those
dreams.
The dreams where we run and run and run and we never go
anywhere?
You ever
had one of those?
Yeah, I mean, you just keep running and you never go anywhere.
Well, that's a slight variation. That actually comes farther down the list, the sort of stuck in slow motion of the Jell-O kind of dream, can't scream. But, they're variations on a theme. And there are about, 10 to 15 really, really universal ones. So we can talk about some of those, and probably we'll touch all the listeners. The biggest one is the falling dream.
And maybe because we're human beings. I mean, what are people like, you know, George Bush, what do they dream about? And, do their dreams change? I mean, he's got to be under a lot of stress, pressure, because of the job he's got. I wonder what they dream about. I wonder if anybody's ever asked him that question.
Well, maybe we can get him to call in the third hour.
You might. We got a big station up there in Washington, D.C., and I'm told every once in a while he just may listen to a program or two.
Oh, great.
But that would be interesting. I mean, human beings dream, no matter who you are. Abraham Lincoln used to dream, and I think he believed his dreams were telling him messages.
Well, you know about Lincoln pre-dreamt his own death, right?
Yes, I heard about that.
And it was actually written in his journal, and they found it after he died.
He knew it was going to happen.
Interesting guy, and he actually, had the day and the timing location.
Why didn't he stop it?
These things aren't always exactly clear in terms of what can I act on and what can I do? When can I change it? For example, people phoned in for Kennedy and had dreams of that and said, beware, don't go to visit where he got shot and everything. But still, he went. So it's choices and probabilities and steering them in the healthy way is what the big challenge is.
Stay with us, Craig. We're going to talk about lucid dreaming when we come back. Later on, we'll open up the phone lines. We'll also open up Fast Blast questions for you, and you can share some of your stories. Nightmares up next, too, is well on Coast to Coast AM. Had an opportunity this weekend to meet Whitley and Ann Strieber. What a delightful couple. I mean, just superb, as nice as you can imagine. And Ann is doing real well from her illness. Your prayers, I'm sure, were heard. She looks great. Whitley has a new book coming out soon. As a matter of fact, his publisher and my publisher are the same publisher. And that's where I had that opportunity to meet them. But his new book is called Grays, and it'll be out this month in August. And either I'll have him on the program or Art will have him on his show. Just an incredible story right there. But the delightful couple, and it was just really a treat for me to meet them both this weekend. In a moment, Craig Webb, as we continue talking about dreams on Coast to Coast AM. Hey, Craig, before we get into lucid dreaming, let's talk about nightmares for a moment, why people have these kinds of dreams. I always remember the movie Contact, where the alien talked about how we as Earthlings were capable of such wonderful things and some horrible nightmares as well. Mm-hmm. Why do we have these horrible dreams? And I mean, little children have them, adults have them. I mean, what is happening? Why are these occurring?
And little kids usually don't call them nightmares either. They call them bad dreams.
Yeah, really. Mommy,
no,
mommy.
We have to get the language right, because if you say I had a nightmare, they go, no.
Good but point.
So bad dream, nightmare, recurring dreams especially. You know, recurring dreams are really a lesson or some important thing that we need to really get. It's like a course that we're not passing. That's why they're coming back. But let's start where a lot of people start. And I've noticed this in my courses when I started leading 8- and 10-week courses in lucid living, that some people start with no dream recall or very little.
Is that normal?
I'd say that's a good portion of the population. Not more than 50% of people who decide to take the courses, but certainly a portion. In the general population, probably 50% or more.
Okay, it doesn't mean you have some kind of mental condition or medical condition or anything like that, right?
Not necessarily. It just means that you haven't worked out what I call the mental muscle, because it really is kind of like a muscle, mm-hmm. of dream recall. Or do you know what we call this, the same skill of dream recall during the day?
What?
Intuition.
Okay.
Creative insight also, but kind of a channel of information that doesn't come from logic and doesn't come from the physical senses, obviously. So hunches, impulses, intuition. And I say that just so people can see, even if you never look at another dream, understand it, or tell anyone, just the fact of recalling them, maybe recording them or writing them down, you're actually developing and strengthening your intuition. So it has its payoff in certain ways. And I see that as soon as some of these no-recall people start dreaming, the first week, pretty much everybody gets a nightmare or some kind of anxiety dream, unless they've been having lots of dream recall and they've been working with their dreams. And I was shocked and kind of surprised. And I say, wow, what's this about? Remember your dream you had through your college years?
Yep.
So it's just the first thing that's in the queue, the backlog, basically, is something that's kind of screaming for our attention. It's like the oil light has been going off on our car if we've been driving along in our life. And it was annoying. Maybe we had a nightmare or we had these really bad feelings in the morning and we forgot our dreams because we had this terrifying dream, you know, 4 years ago. And I see this all the time. And we end up putting a Band-Aid over the oil light or sort of removing a battery from our inner smoke alarm when we cancel our dreams or when we ignore them.
But some people dream, I mean, horrible dreams, like, you know, their appendages are falling off.
Yeah,
you know, they're falling off cliffs, they're getting stabbed.
Falling.
I mean, yeah, why is this happening to them?
So, getting to some of the specifics, the general principle is it's a huge, important lesson that their subconscious wants to show or teach them. And there's a little bit of a separation there from post-traumatic stress disorder dreams, PTSD, in that it might just be kind of a healing or helping to feel feelings that they couldn't feel at some time in their life if they're a war veteran or this type of thing. There was way too much feeling. So there's different classes of nightmares, but generally the main thing is that they're trying to guide us toward the healthier future, and they want us to listen to them. They're like kind of taking us by the neck and saying, listen, 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 this is something really important. And here's the here's the real kicker. If we don't listen to the dreams when they're kind of coming as nightmares, as loud messages, you know what happens?
What?
They show up in the daytime. They kind of...
Real life.
You weren't listening there, so we're going to kind of cross what I call the perceptual event horizon. We're going to break into, you know, the next level of your awareness, and that's your waking life. We're going to have a broken relationship, or you might lose your job, or you might have a physical accident or an illness. And people don't generally trace it back, but they could have avoided a lot of these physical accidents and problems if they would have watched their dreams and nightmares earlier.
Well, are you saying nightmares are warning signs?
Yeah, that's the smoke alarm, or that's the oil light. You know, don't put a Band-Aid or pull the battery out of the smoke alarm, because here we are, you know, getting these important messages. Yeah, it's annoying. We have to go into the garage. We have to change the oil, at least, and maybe a part or two in the engine that costs $100. But imagine how much we're going to save us from, you know, 100 miles down the highway when we have to change the whole engine because it melted down. And the analogy means maybe we pick up cancer or something terrible that the dreams were trying to help us avoid. And there's pretty well-tracked anecdotal cases, at least, and somewhat statistically in my experience, that these things correspond with, you know, pretty specific types of errors or problems in our waking life of diseases, accidents, relationship breakups. So catch them early, you know.
Aside from trying to get books on interpreting dreams, how do you know what to do? How do you know why the dream is and what kind of message it might be trying to send you?
That's you bring up a good point here, because it's one thing to get the data, it's another to act on it, right?
You got it.
So the general thing that I encourage people to ask is kind of an upgrade from what's been the overall thinking in our culture since sort of Jung and Freud and some of the early dream pioneers. They said, what does the dream mean? And encourage people to understand dreams. And that's good. But an upgrade or a larger picture, a bigger picture, would be to ask the question, what does the dream want? And that'll probably include what does the dream mean, but it doesn't always have to. And if you ask that question, sometimes an impulse or a thought comes of something that you're supposed to do in your waking life or change, or it just encourages you to go and study a little bit more. As for some of the universal recurring dreams, we can get into a couple, but people can check out the website, www.dreams.ca. I think about the second or third link down on the right, there's an article there that says, Nightmares? Lucky you.
Lucky you?
And people go, what? I don't want nightmares. And I say, exactly, but don't push them down, repress them, or ignore them, because that's sort of the oil light here.
All right, give me an example.
Yeah,
of somebody's,
let's go to the
of
actual
some, yeah, tell me some things here of people who have had nightmares and how they've reacted to it and what they've meant.
So here's the powerful messages that are coming as warnings. And we'll pick a pretty famous example for starters so that, you know, I'm not making it up. This one's pretty well documented. Sleep pioneer William Dement, one of the co-discoverers of REM sleep, you know, the rapid eye movements that we have when our visual dreams generally happen. And he recorded this dream where he was with the doctors in the hospital looking at the X-ray board, and it was a picture of his lungs. And the doctor is giving him really bad news about, wow, I'm really sorry, sir, but you're not going to grow up to see your family or your children, or you only have a few months or maybe a year or two, but you have lung cancer and it's going to kill you. And, you know, the worst possible feeling imaginable to not see his children grow up and everything like that. And he woke up, and probably a lot of listeners can relate, and they say, whew, thank goodness, that was just a dream kind of thing. Except that it's also an action item. It's like it's one of these questions. If we ask the question, what does the dream want? Well, it wants you to do something about it. So immediately, fortunately, he trusted dreams and had worked with dreams and knew that they carried important messages and meanings. And at that moment, he quit smoking right away. And, you know, I met him a few years ago, and he's still going reasonably strong. So we can't prove that case specifically, that he would have died by cancer, but he certainly made an action that helped him in his waking life according to a specific and single nightmare that he had.
And maybe his body was telling him something. And
yeah.
And that's what
simple, clear
it did.
Message like, hey, it's not necessarily the worst thing in the world for everybody, but for you right now, this is really bad news. You know, here's another one. This is a little more symbolic, but I think this is probably one of the most universal ones. In fact, you might be interested to know, George, that I've actually had a few guidance dreams of my own when I've been writing articles or setting up the website or going on radio shows to actually specifically share this dream when I was going to put a few others. So probably has something inside it that the dream weavers like. But it's a person that I know from California and worked with a bit, who named Mimi.
Mimi.
Maybe she might even be listening. Who knows? Hello, Mimi, if you're listening. And she shared this dream and was okay sharing with the public of she had recurring chase dreams. And many listeners can relate. This is one of the biggest universal themes of running and, you know, doors closing behind us or running on foot in a chase or being chased in a car. And she woke up stressed and, you know, ruined her day, not to mention that she was tired, et cetera, because being woken up in the night. And she learned about lucid dreaming, which is one of the ways to deal with it. There's some other ways. But to consciously go in and guide and change her dream to a new ending. So a few weeks later or some short time thereafter, she was in the same similar dream anyways, but this time she was being chased in a car. And the pursuer, the kind of same archetypal scary figure, is hot on her heels, and she can see in the rearview mirror that he's gaining on her, and the fear is mounting. So she pulls into a parking lot, hops out of the car, starts running on foot. You know, the tension's mounting. And the pursuer's closing in, closer and closer, and all of a sudden, she has that kind of magic, lucid moment, the recognition moment. Whoa, this is that same recurring nightmare. This is the same dream. So she realizes that she's in a dream. And, you know, enough of a memory from waking life punches through that says, hey, you want to change the ending and you're safe in bed, so do something new instead of waking up in fright and having a ruined day again. So she turns around, whirls around, and here's the key thing in almost all these nightmares. This is a really important point. She still has the fear. The fear is still there inside her body, but I think it's Eleanor Roosevelt who said, you know, courage isn't the absence of fear. It's acting in spite of it. So here she is with the great fear, and the pursuer is standing there, and she whirls around and says, this is my dream, and you can't hurt me. And she stands her ground, and he looks at her, and she looks at him for the first time, by the way, some archetypal stuff going on.
Yeah.
She actually recognizes some disowned part of herself, if we do psychological talk. And she sees that he actually has really beautiful, loving eyes, and he looks really friendly. And he says to her, hurt you? What? I've been running after you all this time to actually tell you that I love you. But hey, you've been running, so I've been chasing you. She goes, what? But he takes her hands and, you know, symbolically kind of dissolves into her being or her body or maybe into her heart or something. And she wakes up electrified, exhilarated, and obviously feeling really great. So here's the data. She said the dream never happened again. So that's the one thing, just like you experienced, I think, when Rosemary helped you with your dream, right?
Mm-hmm.
So we end the recurring scenario. In other words, we got the lesson, or we made the shift. And so that you can see some of the practical links of how it connects with life, this one being a little more emotionally symbolic, some of them being a little more directly, you know, related to physical events and car crashes and things. But this one, emotionally symbolic, she said at work and in her personal relationships that she was able to be a lot more assertive, stand her ground, and kind of say the same thing she did in the dream. You know what? No, here's my view. And I'd like to have you listen to my view also and stand her ground. So she got some big, deep archetypal lesson there, too.
Have you ever heard of a case where people can enter the dream state of other people's dreams?
Right from the old movie Dreamscape.
Yes, sure is.
Yeah, well, that one wasn't the greatest press for dreams, unfortunately. Because, yes, it's possible to, A, connect. We spoke about sort of telepathic dreaming or, you know, using the internet. Kind of like our voicemail, you know, go and connect with a dreamer to save money on a phone bill. And we can certainly connect with people kind of remote viewing ways of pick up things in their rooms and things. But, I spaced out here. Give me the question again.
Well, we wanted to enter people's dreams.
Okay. And it kind of goes to this ethics question.
You were dozing off on me for a moment, weren't you?
Yeah, I should be. You know, I'm talking about what everybody else is practicing right now.
Sorry, you were dreaming.
I have to give you a little visual, though, George. This is pretty interesting. I'll come back to that question, but just so that you know how you've entered my dream tonight in waking life.
Oh my.
I was dozing off a little before we started the show to kind of rest up and relax, be fresh for you. And all of a sudden, there's this huge buzzing sound, and there was this major, like, 2-inch cockroach on my foot. I was like, whoa. But I didn't go into the fear, walked outside, put it out there. But, you know, in a half-dream, half-awake state, so then I go, that's strange enough. Then the power goes off. So I'm sitting around here with all these candles and flashlights right now, like some kind of strange otherworldly seance talking to you across the country. And then there's this about 3-inch spider that runs across my leg. And these things don't happen too often. Right?
That's producer Tom. He has
maybe
the ability.
Maybe you're sending nightmares over here. What are you trying to do, test me?
Yeah, that's right. The producer Tom has the ability to shapeshift, and he's turned himself into a spider, and that's him over there.
Okay, well, maybe I should be asking you this question. Can we enter other people's dreams?
I think you can.
And it's definitely been shown. It's called mutual dreaming. A friend and colleague of mine wrote a book about it, Linda Lane Magayon.
I don't believe, Craig, that the other person has to be receptive to accept you or to accept your dream. I think a strong dreamer has the ability to send himself into the dream state, into the mind of the other person.
Well, interesting. Here's my take on it, because,
right,
you know, who really knows other than that as oneironauts, as first-person explorers, each of us goes and we come back with our own results, and maybe statistically we see what's possible, but everybody gets their own truth. That's the nice thing about dreams. So here's mine, and that is that there is some kind of quote-unquote permission-based dreaming or experience in that if we kind of set a protective boundary and we don't want somebody to enter into our dreams or bother us on that level, then we can kind of avoid that experience. Or, you know, on the other side, which I think you've tried and some other people may have tried, we can sort of put in a welcome invitation or energetically or emotionally invite them into our dream space or say that we're going to go and enter theirs and agree upon, you know, author Richard Bach.
Or invade them.
What's that?
Or invade them. You may not be invited in. I think you can still get there without even being invited in.
So here's where you and I differ a little bit.
All right,
I might offer the idea that's the bridge, is if nobody really sets up any background sort of operating system or software that says, you know, I sort of want to be clear and don't want unwanted intruders to enter into my dreams, if they don't kind of set up that suggestion or belief, and they, let's say they worry about things, or they think, or they believe that it's possible, like you do, then, or maybe they believe that it's impossible to block other people, then they're actually courting maybe experiences that they don't want. But my experience has been, if you choose it clearly and know that it's possible, you can sort of keep people out of your dream space.
Oh, that'll be interesting, because, you know, I continue to experiment in this. My late aunt used to do a lot of this in terms of experimenting, and there's something to it. It's an incredible ability by certain people. I don't know why most people or some people can do it and other people can't. You know, it's the same with, you know, out-of-body experiences. I don't know why I had
them. Why are some people, are they gifted?
Yeah,
or they practice a bunch
exactly.
Or what?
I mean, it happened to me when I was 11 or 12. I've never been able to duplicate it again. I've had more guests on this program than you can count on your hands with different techniques.
Yeah.
I can't do it. I cannot do it, but other people claim they can.
Yeah, well, I could give you some tips. But let's try an overall belief framework first, just to give people an idea of what might be going on. Who knows for sure, but this is my take on it. Is there's some kind of veto power. So this kind of goes a little bit against what I just said. But on some deeper, let's say, you know, deep unconscious level or deep wise level, something closer to our soul or ourself or the words, whatever words you like. But let's say some part of us that has pretty good scruples or high ethics, that part of us might veto that, you know, it's not healthy for somebody else to enter our dream, or it may veto that it's really important right now for someone else to enter our dream when we don't consciously want it, you know, for whatever healing purposes or for guidance. We don't know on a conscious level, as sort of, you know, Craig talking to George in waking life here. But on a deep level, the soul or subconscious vetoes that decision and says, you know what, we're going to connect them, or we're going to block them even if they want to. So there's, you know, different levels of awareness, and when they play against each other, things get a bit confusing. I think that's where some of the troubles happen.
You know, interesting. Well, lucid dreaming, that's what we'll talk about next when we come back. Again, what's at the website, dreams.ca?
Oh, well, there's lots of great tips on lucid dreaming. There's a whole page there called Pathways to Lucidity. Check out dreams.ca. I think it's about the fourth or fifth link down on the right. And, you know, they're about the best tips and tricks that we've found in all the research at Stanford with Dr. LeBerge and the stuff I work with clients. And there's a few others that aren't mentioned on there that we offer in workshops and trainings, and those are listed in the events on that page too.
Okay, very good. Well, Craig, you stick with us. We're going to be back with you in just a moment as the hour has quickly gone by. Later on, we'll open up Fast Blasts and we'll take questions as well. Lucid Dreaming, that's next up on Coast to Coast AM.